Your Honor.
Case number 08-5143. Mayor Brown, LLP, formerly doing business as Mayor Brown, Rowe & Ma, LLP, Appellant versus Internal Revenue Service. Mr. Durham for the appellant, Mr. Cohen for the appellee.
Good morning. I have reserved 2 minutes for rebuttal. Good morning, Your Honors. This is a FOIA Exemption 7E case. It's our contention that the IRS is trying to conceal garden variety legal analysis under the guise of 7E of the FOIA, which exempts only guidelines for law enforcement investigations or prosecutions if such disclosure could reasonably be expected to risk circumvention of the law. There are two preliminary points which are important to get out of the way here. How do we know that the IRS is attempting to hide garden variety legal analysis? Well, the IRS has produced a copy of a draft version of the appeals settlement guidelines. And at page 98 of the appendix, the last four paragraphs on that page have 7, 2, 5, and 4 lines respectively. In the final appeals settlement guidelines, at that point in the final appeals settlement guidelines, is also missing 4 paragraphs, or I should say, in the final version, 4 paragraphs with 7, 2, 5, and 4 lines have been shown to be redacted. And similarly, throughout the final version, there are other redactions made in the final version which do not appear were made in the draft version. The IRS has never denied that the final ASG includes the same or similar language as included in the draft. The reasons for the IRS's desire to conceal this material are obvious, as the concealed material recognizes that the IRS's position may well be wrong. The draft ASG, in fact, states the government's position might fail. The second preliminary point here is that this is not an Exemption 5 case. There is no work product involved here. There is no attorney-client privilege involved here. The IRS has waived any such claims.
Now, you concede, don't you, that this information, the first part, that the information was compiled for law enforcement purposes?
Yes, we do.
All right. Let me ask you about the language of the rest of that section. Do you have it in front of you?
Yes, I believe
All right.
I do.
To me, techniques and procedures for law enforcement investigations or prosecutions and guidelines for law enforcement investigations or prosecutions are no different. And the only thing that's different about those two clauses is that the latter one, that is, it involves guidelines, has the condition if such disclosure could reasonably be expected to risk circumvention of the law. In other words, if you're asking for techniques and procedures for law enforcement investigations or prosecutions, that condition doesn't apply. If you're asking for guidelines for law enforcement investigations, that condition does apply. Now, that doesn't make a lot of sense to me, but also it doesn't make sense to me that there's a difference between techniques and procedures for law enforcement investigations and guidelines for law enforcement investigations. So would you address how you read that portion of the exemption and how you interpret what is different about techniques and procedures on the one hand and guidelines on the other.
Are you saying that the circumvention clause does not apply to guidelines but does apply?
Well, what I'm saying is if you read it, if those two things mean the same, that is, if techniques and procedures are equivalent to guidelines, then you've got something that's superfluous, unless there's something about guidelines that's different. And the argument, I guess, could be made, although I don't think it's a reasonable argument, that if you're asking for guidelines as opposed to techniques and procedures, you have to, it's disclosable unless the disclosure would reasonably be expected to risk circumvention.
I am not aware of any case law that's ever drawn a distinction between guidelines and techniques and procedures.
All right, so
I have never seen such a distinction.
It's just a matter of being
made.
Redundant, or how would you interpret techniques and procedures differently from guidelines?
Well, I think most of the cases have focused more on techniques and procedures. In fact, at page 20 to 21 of its brief, the defendant has stated that security clearance procedures, investigative techniques, and criteria for selection of returns for examination have all been protected under 7E. And it's one of our contentions in this case that 7E focuses on those types of investigative procedures and techniques.
So would you say guidelines is kind of more amorphous? Or?
Yes, it seems to me that guidelines have been amorphous. And in fact, in cases such as the district court decision in Tax Analyst, the court allowed the production of law or legal guidelines, I should say, because I believe that legal principles could be construed as guidelines. And that type of sort of legal analysis, legal guidelines, have been found to be not protected by the FOIA, whereas specific techniques and procedures, which might allow the circumvention of the law, have been protected.
Can I ask you if anywhere in the record there's any better description of what the legal analysis portion of this undisclosed information consists of? Because I'm thinking of the decision in PHE where we said, you know, if it's case law, or in this case, if it were revenue rulings or something, if that's all it consisted of, then yes, that's disclosable.
Well, that's
but there's no way, I don't see anything in this record, either from her decision or from the submission made by you all that describes what legal analysis consists of.
Well,
the affidavits of the IRS.
Well, as I said earlier, we believe this is an unusual case and that we think we know exactly what we're looking for. If you look at the bottom of page 98, in the addendum, the appendix, the last four paragraphs of that page have been redacted from the final. And what you see here is largely a description of the Bridges case. And the IRS earlier in this document had mentioned the Bridges case at page 96 and had made an analysis of the Bridges case which favors the IRS's position. But if you look at page 98, the IRS realizes that there is a contrary analysis of the Bridges case. And so the redacted material, we believe, indicates that there well may be a contrary analysis of the Bridges case.
Okay.
And similarly, if you look at page 95 of the addendum, virtually everything on page 95 was redacted from the final analysis, everything except the very last paragraph. And if you see all of that material on page 95, is a discussion, we believe, of garden variety case law in legal analysis. And so if that is what is being redacted from the vinyl version, we believe that if you describe it as guidelines, these are simply legal guidelines, garden variety analysis. And that if that, in fact, is what is being concealed, we believe that was improper.
I know we're here talking about 7E, but I just can't help but think that there might be some other better basis not that we would consider, but isn't there a deliberative process?
That has been waived, Your Honor.
I know it's been waived, but wouldn't that be a better?
Well, there is no deliberative process exemption for the final ASG, because the final is by definition the final word. And the final word from an agency is never covered by the deliberative process exemption. And so the government has not raised deliberative process.
If I understand your argument, I think you're saying that these would qualify as guidelines for enforcement of a certain kind, but that in your view, if it's legal analysis, the disclosure of a legal analysis could not reasonably be expected to risk circumvention. Is that?
This court, in other tax analyst cases, has repeatedly said that production of the law to the public does not risk circumvention. In fact, it encourages compliance. This court said that in one of the tax analyst cases. And under the concept of secret law, the agency is not allowed to produce the working law of the agency, which the agency uses to promote standards to be applied uniformly. And I think that's exactly what we have here, is legal discussion to promote uniform standards. And I'm not sure I'm saying that these are guidelines for law enforcement. I don't think I have to sort of make that argument. I'm simply saying that these are not covered by the guidelines or the investigative techniques, because this type of legal analysis, as this court has repeatedly held, is not covered by 7E.
Now, I thought you had conceded up at the top of the 7E exemption that this is information compiled for law enforcement purposes.
Yes.
Oh, but not guidelines.
Yes, I agree that this information has been compiled for law enforcement purposes. Certainly the IRS was in the process of trying to enforce and trying to provide guidelines about law enforcement, so we don't dispute that. Okay. If I can, I would.
We'll
guess I have no more time.
Mr. Cohen.
May it please the court, I'm John Cohen. With me is John Schumann from my office, who is the briefing attorney on this case. I'd like to address really two points. The first, I think, is to carry further a little bit some of the comments that you made, Judge Henderson, with respect to the text of the statute itself. The statute is written in terms of disclosing techniques and procedures for law enforcement investigation and so on, or would disclose guidelines for law enforcement investigations or prosecutions, if such disclosure could reasonably be expected to risk circumvention. Now, these words seem to me to pretty clearly contemplate more than just a hunch, but they also contemplate less than absolute certainty. So what we're talking about here is a disclosure of guidelines, the disclosure of which the agency has determined reasonably could be expected to risk circumvention of the law. Now, these guidelines...
What do you understand circumvention of the law to mean?
Circumvention of the law would be ways to set up as in LILO and SILO transactions, bogus tax shelters.
So it's the setting up of the tax shelter.
Yeah. Or participating
what
in
is
it.
There about participating what is there in about understanding what's in the settlement guidelines that would lead someone to set up a bogus tax shelter? These people have already done that, right?
These people have done or have participated in this has been done, but now these cases are in litigation. They are in controversy or they are in appeals. And the question is, because there are settlement initiatives that have been put out by the Internal Revenue Service, do we take the settlement, for example, a concession, 80% of the tax?
That's not going to change whether or not they enter into a bogus tax shelter, right?
It's already happened.
But so the circumvention of the law, to the extent it has occurred, has already occurred. It's in the past, right?
But the circumvention of the law is also the final payment, the bill, in terms of are they going to get the tax break that they went into. It applies not just to promotion, but it applies to the people who invested in these, and those shelters have been blown up. The settlement guideline would give a taxpayer the option, if it didn't want to litigate, to give up 80%, and the government would give up the penalties. That would be a settlement guideline. But let me give you a concrete and rather simple.
That's circumvention of the law? That's not a circumvention of the law. You're talking about, as far as I understand it, what's happening here is you're talking about incentives to settle and at what level, right? But you're not talking about whether someone is going to enter into a new illegal tax.
No, it's not. This isn't done. There is an aspect of this that does look toward future litigation. There's no question about that. What vehicle would the IRS choose not to settle, but rather to use for a litigating vehicle? Sure, there is that as well. And in that respect, that is part of the agency's function, is to pick not a loser or a possible loser, but the one that's as close as it can to a good winner. But to give you an example, legal analysis, and this is disclosed in the settlement guidelines, is this circuit has held in a similar case that X and the taxpayer wins. That circuit, on roughly similar or very similar facts, has held that the government wins. We now have a case in which the taxpayer is in an uncommitted, a neutral circuit. Okay? So far, I don't have any problem with releasing that. I'm sure the IRS doesn't. But if you go on to say, based on this, we think that 50 cents on the dollar is a pretty good deal for both sides. That reflects the litigating risks. That's the part that's cut out. That's the part that is...
And if they knew that, how does that risk circumvention of the law as opposed to going as close to the edge as possible, in other words, tax avoidance rather than tax evasion?
Well, that gets into an area that rapidly becomes almost metaphysical, because but let's take it back one step to a simpler note. There aren't many.
Wait, let me just ask you the question without all that then. What would risk circumvention of the law if they knew that 50 cents on the dollar was what would be settled? What would be a reasonable settlement amount?
Well, they would say this is a lot better than taking the published the settlement offer, which is we've got to cough up 80%. If under these circumstances, 50% would be we'd be doing a lot better.
And how does that risk?
And besides, there would be other possibilities that if this is what they're willing to go for in this kind of shelter, wow, if we've got one over here that's got even more layers and more foreign banks, these would be even harder for the service to work out. Maybe they'd concede 80% instead of making us concede 80%. So there's all kinds of...
That's pretty speculative, your last example.
Yes, but I understand that. But to try to pin this down just a bit, there's only really half a dozen documents here. They're thick. They're bulky. They're in this Blue Bond, those are the in-camera submissions. This is not PHE. I know, Judge Henry, you wrote that opinion, and you had one set of really good affidavits from the FBI and one set of perfectly awful ones from the Justice Department, and no in-camera review. Well, here you've got a comparison, a side-by-side of unredacted raw stuff and the redactions. Now, my colleague seems to put this in some kind of nefarious light, that the IRS is trying to hide its inconsistencies. It's trying to somehow throw up a smokescreen here. It is not. And let me make one other, I think, significant point. This is not, repeat, not agency secret law. These are not FSAs. Believe me, in this courtroom, I lost the FSA case. I lost it cold. Because those documents, among other things, began, it is service position that. Okay, that's all she wrote. These are written by appeals for use in appeals. These are not secret law. They are guidelines. That is all they are. Unless the court has any other questions, I'm through.
All right. If you want to take a minute or two to respond to anything the IRS has said.
I would like to take a minute or also. In my original presentation, I didn't talk about circumvention, and that is a necessary element that the IRS must prove. They must prove not merely possible circumvention, but they must make a strong showing that there is likelihood that the law will be circumvented if this material is produced. And as the court noted, this document, the final ASG, was published 5 years after LILOs had been prohibited by the IRS. So you're entirely correct that there is no possible circumvention which could result from this, because these transactions had all been undertaken 5 years, at least 5 years, before this document was prevented. So
is circumvention limited to just the transaction itself, or could it include the consequences? The tax liability, in fact.
Well, we believe that the circumvention, if there is any, you know, takes place when an amount is underreported on a tax return. And you addressed many questions to the settlement discussions, and Mr. Cohen did too. But that precise argument was specifically addressed by a tax analysis, a district court decision, which was Lexis 19514, which we've cited in our briefs, and that is identical to this case. And in that case, Judge Kessler said that there is no circumvention when the IRS settles a case with a taxpayer. If the IRS believes a taxpayer is wrong, the IRS is free to get up and walk away, and it's free to prosecute that taxpayer. But if the IRS is choosing to enter into a settlement, whether it's 80%, 50%, whatever, there is no circumvention when the IRS settles a case with a taxpayer. So there's no possibility of circumvention simply by the fact of settlement.
Well, I think that is a better argument than the argument that I think you made. I don't know that you argued this today in your brief, that because the silos and LILOs are gone, there can be no circumvention, because if this didn't involve the fact that they're settlement documents makes it different. If they were legal analyses of schemes that had been thrown out, that still would give a taxpayer an idea, as I said, of how close to the edge he could get. Now, these are settlement papers, which I think you're right as far as risking circumvention. I mean, circumvention can be avoided by challenging what the taxpayer has done and by not settling.
But I think it's extremely speculative to suggest that taxpayers could devise other new plans as a result of seeing this. Conceivable, maybe, but that seems to be so speculative as to not fall within.
And I think that would be because they're settlement documents as opposed to the fact that Lilos and Silos no longer exist.
Yes. But I think that it's simply a settlement document which says, here are the IRS's views. You know, the possibility of a taxpayer saying, well, you know, now that I know the IRS's views, I'm going to try to invent something that will remain within those views. If a taxpayer does that, that's not circumvention. As the tax analyst case says, it's all to the good if the public knows what the IRS's legal position is.
All right, thank you.